Good day and welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. The following message is part 7 of a series called The Wonder of Worship and is presented by Ray Noah, lead pastor here at the center. Today's study comes from the book of Romans, chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. Let's join Ray as he shares with us this week's message titled, The Worship of a Holy Life.
Okay, we will wait for Mrs. Noah to sit down. And that concludes our fellowship time. Well, we're talking about the wonder of worship these days. And one of the great passages, one of the key passages, really, in the entire Bible, in the New Testament, on worship is found in Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. I want you to turn there again, Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. We've been here in this verse now for many, many weeks. We've used some other verses as well, and we'll use some other verses today to highlight this. But we're coming back to this great passage, Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2, as we continue in our journey in a series called The Wonder of Worship. And we'll read this in just a moment. But, you know, we've been reminded in this series, hopefully, the Holy Spirit is bringing a reminder and spiritual revelation and insight into our hearts, that worship is the supreme reason why we exist. It's the supreme reason why we exist. It's actually why we continue to live, even at this very minute. You wonder why you're alive, what God's purpose for you in being, taking in oxygen right now? It's worship. And this will be our chief activity, worship, throughout all eternity. In other words, worship is our reason for being. It's our primary purpose. And it is our eternal preoccupation. And so I would say that worship is pretty important, wouldn't you? In fact, I can't think of anything else that really is more important, foundationally important, than to understand and to rightly practice this thing called worship. Now, I realize that worship is a very broad, complex, multi-dimensional, and a deeply profound topic. And I think, unfortunately, in our day, at least in the Western world, in especially in American churches, worship has become controversial. I think that's unfortunate. But it is definitely a deep and a broad, complex topic. And yet, it's also, I think, quite simple and easy to grasp. How can something be complex and yet simple and easy to grasp? Well, I think the Lord has made it that way. One of the best and the most helpful definitions of worship I know is this. Worship is the offering of everyday life to God. You've heard me say that before. I hope you'll get it into your heart. I hope that you will allow the Holy Spirit to take these words off the screen and out of my voice and really just cement them into your heart, into your spirit, into your being, that this is really what worship is. Worship is simply the offering of everyday life to God. In fact, so that we're all on the same page this morning, would you say that with me? Worship is the offering of everyday life to God. Worship is giving. Not getting, but getting. But giving all that I am and all that I have, all the time, all for God, for His purpose and His pleasure. Worship is not about me getting something from God. Worship is not about style. It's not about substance even. It's not about the setting that we're in. Now, those aren't unimportant. I want you to understand that. Those are important discussions, but they're really not the core of what worship is. I think those things are vital to understanding our context and having an effective worship service and worship experience and a life of worship, that we get those things right. But, you know, worship isn't about whether we are a contemporary worship church or whether we're a traditional worship church. It's not about whether we have a choir in robes or not. It's not about whether we use an organ and a piano only, or we use drums and guitars and have more of a rock concert feel or more of a traditional hymns-only worship experience. That's not fundamental to what worship is all about. It's not about the setting that we're in. It's not about whether we have a beautiful sanctuary with stained glass or a lovely cathedral, or we worship in a warehouse where it's darkened for mood's sake and it's more reflective. It has nothing to do with that. Worship is about giving all that I am and all that I have all the time, all for God. for His purpose and His pleasure. The other things are simply our preferences, and those are okay. And again, I think they're worthy that we have those kind of discussions. But let's not confuse them with what worship fundamentally is all about. Worship is about me giving my all to God for His glory. And in doing that, all of my needs, all of my desires, all of my preferences, all of my longings are going to be fulfilled. Worship is not about me, it's all about Him. Worship is not about us, it's all about Him. But we get so much back from God when we get worship right. Worship is all about Him. That's the call of Romans chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. It says, "Therefore I urge you, in view of God's mercy, to offer your bodies as living sacrifices, holy and pleasing to God. This is your spiritual act of worship. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, His good, pleasing, and perfect will." Now, for several weeks, we've been talking about what that looks like, what it means to offer ourselves, spirit, body, and mind, fully to the Lord. So over the next several weeks now, I want us to begin to zero in a very specific, very practical way in terms of what that looks like in our everyday lives. So over the next several weeks, we're going to talk about the worship of various dimensions of our lives. And this morning, I want to unpack just one word in verse 1 that I'm convinced, in my opinion, and I think it's a theologically informed opinion, this one word in verse 1 that is the gateway to God-pleasing worship. And it's the word holy. You notice that word in verse 1? Holy. Say that with me. Holy. Oh no, he's going to talk about holiness. Oh yeah, we're going to talk about the offering of a holy life, the worship of a holy life that is pleasing and acceptable to God. Now, a lot of people, if they think about holiness at all, are probably bracing themselves at this moment, at this very moment, for a dull sermon. Or there might be those of you in this place today that grew up under a lot of holiness teaching, and that teaching tended to kind of misapply what holiness was in various dimensions of living, and you're kind of burnt out on holiness teaching, and maybe you're bracing yourself for a downer of a sermon. And if that's you on either side, if you think it's going to be dull or if you think it's going to be a downer, then my aim today is to disappoint your expectations, because I don't think it's going to be. I love what C.S. Lewis said. He said, "How little people know who think that holiness is dull, or I would add a downer. When one meets the real thing, it's irresistible. When one comes into a correct understanding and a right experience of holiness, it is an irresistible experience that we have. And God wants to reveal to us and give to us this morning an irresistible experience of His holiness that becomes our holiness. And so let's figure out what the real irresistible thing, holiness, is, and how offering a holy life to God, how offering this life of holiness to God is such pleasing worship to Him and such pleasant work to us. It is pleasing to Him, and it can be a pleasant offering that we offer from our lives back to Him. So, first off, what is holiness? We talk a lot about holiness, but what is holiness? Well, let me explain it this way. There was a boy that went with his parents to Europe one summer, and among the things that they did there, they visited a lot of the great historic cathedrals. And the kid was just really impressed with the massive stained glass windows in those cathedrals. And he would just stand in awe as he looked at these beautiful artistic creations with the light, the sunlight shining through them. And he was just mesmerized by these stained glass windows that portrayed the saints. Many of them portrayed the saints of church history. When he came back home, he was telling his Sunday school teacher about his experience and about these churches. And she asked him what he liked best about these stained glass windows, because that's what he told her about. And he said, "Well, I like the saints in the windows. I like the saints in the windows." And so she asked him for his definition of what a saint is. And in his mind, he went back to those cathedrals and to those windows, and he pictured that stained glass. And he said this. He said, a saint is someone God shines light through. A saint is someone God shines light through. And that's really the essence of what it means to be a saint. That's the essence of what it means to be holy. By the way, in the New Testament, the word saint and the word holy are one and the same. Come from the same Greek word, hagios. And so when Paul says to greet the saints, or I greet the saints in Ephesus or Philippi or Thessalonica, he's using the same word that is used for holy. It's the holy ones. Greet the holy ones in these various places. And I think that's a pretty good, that boy's definition is a pretty good definition of what it means to be holy. It is to be one through whom God's light shines. One through whom God's light shines. That is pleasing worship to God. When his light can shine through your everyday life. When my life gets cleaned up, when the windows get Windex sprayed on them and all the grime and all the smudges get off and the light can shine through. When we get rid of the unholiness in our lives, God's light can shine through us in purity. That is worship to God. Holiness is to offer a lifestyle of purity that allows the glory of God to be reflected, to be displayed through your life. That is worship. That's simply, friends, that's simply worship 101. The Apostle Peter wrote in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, he said, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people belonging to God, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. By Peter's definition, that's what holiness means. To be called out from our former life of sin, to be called out from under the spiritual darkness and the practices of darkness that we once did in our old life of sin, and set apart in purity and in holiness for God, so that through my worship, his glorious light can shine. That's what it means to be holy. And so therefore, our holiness is the gateway to God-pleasing worship. I hope you'll understand that. I pray that the Holy Spirit brings revelation of that to your mind and to your heart. Holiness is the gateway to God-pleasing worship. Ephesians 5:8 says, For though your hearts were once full of darkness, now you are full of light from the Lord, and the way you live should show it. The way you live should show it. Now, just a clarification here. Remember that our positional holiness before God is already accomplished fact. That happens when we receive Christ. We are saved by God's grace through faith, by putting our trust in the atoning sacrifice of Jesus Christ. And the moment we do that, we are established in God's sight as holy. In that moment, you cannot be any holier than that. In fact, you are as holy as Jesus himself. God sees you in Christ's holiness because he has robed you with the righteousness of Jesus Christ. And so don't ever doubt that. If you've accepted Jesus Christ by faith, you are holy. Turn to somebody and say, you are holy, man. Come on, you are holy. Yeah, you're a holy man and a holy woman. But what I'm talking about here, friends, is practical holiness. Positional holiness has been already established, but we're talking about practical holiness. That means that I need to marshal all of the powers of me, my spirit, my mind, and my body, and consciously give them up to God as an offering that is holy and pleasing to him in my moment-by-moment, everyday life. I marshal all of me to give all of it to him in holiness and purity, and that is pleasing worship to him. So, why is this business of holiness such a big deal to God? Why is it such a big deal to our life as worshipers? Well, I think it's rather obvious, but let me give you three of the chief reasons why we need to get this holiness thing down and we need to get it going the right way in our walk with the Lord. Three reasons. There are a lot of reasons, but here are three of the chief reasons. First of all, Our holiness is the gateway to worship because God is holy. God is holy. Psalm 99 verse 9 says, "Exalt the Lord our God and worship at his holy mountain, at his holy place, for the Lord our God is holy." The supreme characteristic of God is his holiness. Now, you might think it's one of his other attributes. I would disagree. The thing that makes God God is his holiness. And his holiness pervades and shapes all of his other divine attributes. His love is a holy love. His mercy is a holy mercy. Even his anger and his wrath are holy anger and holy wrath. God is holy. Why is it a big deal? Because God is holy. Second, holiness is the gateway to worship because God has called us to be holy. He's invited us into his holiness. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 14 through 16 says, "As obedient children, do not conform to the evil desires you had when you lived in ignorance, but just as he who called you is holy, so be holy in all you do. For it is written, 'Be holy because I am holy.'" In the next letter that Peter writes, chapter 3, 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 11, Peter asks, since this unholy world that we live in is all passing away, it's going to go away because of God's judgment upon it someday, in light of that, then, how ought we to live? What kind of people ought we to be, Peter asks, and then he answers. He says, "You ought to live holy and godly lives." We have been called to holiness. And then third, holiness is the gateway to worship because a holy life is the prerequisite for seeing God. Holiness is the prerequisite for seeing God. Hebrews chapter 12 verse 14 says, "Without holiness, no one will see the Lord." You know what that means? That means without holiness, imputed holiness, and a walk of holiness, you are not going to know God. You can't understand God. You cannot experience God. You cannot be an authentic worshiper, a God-pleasing worshiper, if you don't get the holiness thing right in your life. Holiness. And so the question is, since God is holy, and since we've been called to holiness, and since without holiness we can't experience and walk with God and know God and worship God, then how come? And if we've been imputed holiness, then how come practical holiness is so hard for us to maintain? You know, it's easy to get because we just get it by grace from God. Why is it so hard to maintain a walk of holiness before the Lord? Well, it's really an easy answer. Because of the gravitational pull, and I think this is perhaps as strong, maybe stronger, than the law of gravity, the forces of gravity that are holding you in your chair right now. The gravitational pull of the world, the flesh, and the devil that pulls you away, steers you away from from practical holiness in your day-to-day life. The world, the flesh, and the devil, this unholy triumvirate, do a pretty good job of luring us out of the light and back into the darkness of unholy living in which we once lived. You know, the Apostle Paul, the fact the Bible talks a lot about this, the New Testament does, and Paul especially has an amazing array of teaching on how this happens. And there's one particular very interesting verse that I want you to look at. It's found in Ephesians chapter 4. Where Paul talks about how we have been called out of this unholy living, out of this old life, out of our darkness, and so we are not to give in and get drawn back into it, like some do, like some live in this unholiness. And he uses this verse, a very interesting verse, in verse 19 of Ephesians 4, where he kind of describes how this happens, what happens when we give in to unholy living. And he writes, "Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust for more." I want to talk about this. The phrase having lost all sensitivity comes from a Greek word that means to be beyond feeling. To be beyond feeling, to be insensitive. You know, a few years ago, many years ago now, when I lived in Colorado, I went to a football game when it was 2 feet of snow probably, about 5 feet of snow probably, I don't know. It was a lot of snow, and it was sub-freezing weather. I think it was 10 degrees below zero, and we sat for 4 or 5 hours watching this crazy game, and I got mild frostbite on my fingers. And my fingertips are, even right now, are beyond feeling. I have a little bit of feeling, but I've lost some sensitivity in my fingertips. To lose sensitivity means to be beyond feeling. In other words, by unholy behavior, we become callous toward God and desensitized to sin. And thereby, we are lured back into a vicious cycle of more unholy living. We get calloused and we get desensitized. I want you to notice in this verse, there are three lures that are used by the world, the flesh, and the devil to pull us back into this desensitized, calloused, insensitive living. The first lure is through the entrapment of the sensual. The entrapment of the sensual. Paul says we lose our sensitivity by giving ourselves over to sensuality. Lost sensuality refers to brazenness, to shamelessness, to total absence of moral restraint. You think we're living in that kind of age right now? Doesn't that describe kind of our age? And particularly the Bible refers to this in terms of sexual sin, not limited to sexual immorality, but in particular this happens through sexual immorality. The second lure is through the enticement of the selfish. The verse talks about indulging in every kind of impurity. In other words, when you give into the sensual, you're going to find yourself focused on what indulges you, what satisfies you, rather than on what pleases God. And we've talked about that as the antithesis of authentic God-pleasing worship. Worship is about pleasing Him. Sometimes we make worship about what pleases us, what we prefer. We're self-centered rather than God-centered in our worship. And when that happens in our worship and in our lives, we have been enticed by the selfish. And then the third lure is the excitement of the sensational. Again, verse 19 refers to a continual lust for more. That's when we fall into the deception that we need and we deserve more than what God has already so graciously provided. The excitement of the sensational. Now, Every age has its way of luring us through these methods. But can you guess what the chief purveyor of the sensual, the selfish, and the sensational is in our culture? Any guesses what the chief mechanism for that to take place, the chief purveyor of that is in our culture? Any guesses? Well, frankly, it's the media. The media. It's not the only one, but it's the chief one. Now, without the media, this would happen anyway because it happens in every culture and every age from the beginning of fallen history up until now. But primarily, this happens through the media. Now, the media used to be defined mainly as television, radio, and print. But today, there are so many sources and there are so many sub-sources of media intake that it really is hard to keep track of. We live in an age where there's a proliferation of media, right? And media tools. I mean, you can't keep up with it. Computers, how many of you have a computer? Raise your hand. I should ask how many don't have a computer. I mean, just 10, 15 years ago, probably most of us did not have a computer. How many of you have a laptop computer? A fair amount. How many of you have a cell phone? How many of you have some sort of MP3 player, music player? Especially the younger ones do. Video games and on and on and on. These media tools go, the list goes. Not to mention all the sub-sources of media influence that happen through each of these kinds of mechanisms. And I'm thinking particularly about the many avenues for social media that draw us in and draw our attention. Now, just from TV and music sources alone, the internet, other computer-driven devices, the average 8 to 18-year-old spends, guess how many hours per day being influenced, being involved with the media? Anyone say five? Higher? How about seven? How about nine? Almost 11 hours on average a day. Young people, and not just young people, but probably, and maybe most of us in this room, maybe not quite as much as young people, but all of us, I think, are spending many, many hours, waking hours, maybe even sleeping hours in our day, driving our lives under the influence of today's culture through our media intake. And even worse, much of that intake, especially for young people, happens when they're alone, when they're not under the discerning eye of a caring and an involved adult. And what do you think the influence of that media intake looks like? Well, for one thing, it means an exposure to a lot of violence. By age 18, young people will have seen 16,000 simulated murders through their media tools, their media machines. 200,000 acts of violence. Pretty serious deal. The American Psychiatric Association says that exposure to media violence increases aggressive behavior in children. It increases aggressive behavior in adults too. How many of you listen to talk radio? How many of you have gripped your steering wheel so hard you thought you were going to pull it off by listening to the political talk these days? You're getting all ramped up. You're getting angry. James 1:20 says, listen to this. James 1:20 says, man's anger does not bring about the righteous life that God desires. Man's anger doesn't bring about a holy life. Paul says in 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 8, I want men everywhere, I want people everywhere to lift up, what? Holy hands in prayer without anger or disputing. You cannot offer yourself in holiness to God if you are living as an angry person. There is no such thing as an angry worshiper. No such thing. And if you struggle in this area, I think some of us do. If you struggle in this area, your media intake is not helping you. Another outcome of media influence is a continual exposure to sexual immorality. I don't need to go into this, but it's just rather evident by just a cursory look at what happens over the media. Over 70% of the TV shows have sexual content. Some of that is content that involves encounters that involve teenagers. More and more we see sexual encounters between same-sex couples, and even worse. Tidal wave of pornography on the internet. We now live in that age. Did you know that there are 4.2 million pornographic websites? 4.2 million pornographic websites. There are 420 million pages on the internet of pornography. And that has doubled in just the last 5 years. There are more porn outlets today than McDonald's restaurants. By far. Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 through 4, God's will is for you to be holy. So stay away from all sexual sin. Then each of you will control his own body and live in what? In holiness, in honor. And then the final outcome of media exposure is an incessant barrage of materialistic enticements. Huh? How many would say yeah to that? Incessant barrage. If you grow up in today's media-driven culture, you will be sent a very persuasive message that you've got to have more. And what you have isn't good enough. And you got to get more, you got to get bigger, you got to get better. And even more media devices to tell you that you need more. I mean, I brought them with me. I was thinking about it this week as I was preparing, in fact, the last couple of days preparing this message. I have here a laptop. I have with me an iPad. I have an iPhone. And I have an iPod. I've got it all. And man, I am connected 24/7. And some of that is good because it enables me to grow, to learn, to gain knowledge as I serve the Lord in this role, as I prepare to minister and to lead you. It's a good thing, but taken to an extreme, it begins to drain the life of God out of me because I'm addicted to it. I get addicted to it. I mean, how many of you have got up at 2 a.m. in the morning to go to the bathroom and then you decided to check your emails on the way back to bed? We live in a media-driven, technological-driven, information age. Listen, the thing is, friend, I'm getting to the close here. The thing is, friends, here's the deal. And my wife is just as bad as me, by the way. Not quite, but close. My daughter's far worse, so. Here's the thing. We are an over-sensated society. We're overly sensated. And seriously, too much of even a good thing is draining our holiness. 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 16 says, "Stop loving this evil world and all that it offers you, for when you love the world, you show that you do not have the love of the Father in you. For the world offers only the lust of physical pleasure, the lust for everything we see, the lust and pride in our possessions. These are not from the Father. These are not from the Father. They are from this evil world. So, I say this, be warned. Be warned. Unabated and unchallenged exposure to what the world, the flesh, and the devil offers you will harden your heart toward God. Will harden your heart toward God. When we get entrapped by the sensual, when we get enticed by the selfish, when we get excited by the sensational, we lose our sensitivity to the things of God. And we're wowed by everything else and no longer awed by God. Psalm chapter 86, verses 8 through 10 reminds us there's only one who is truly sensational and satisfying and worthy of our worship. It says, "Nowhere among the pagan gods is there a God like you, O Lord. There are no other miracles like yours. All the nations, and you made each one, will come and bow before you, Lord. They will praise your great and holy name, for you are great and perform great miracles. You alone are God." Friends, some of you are actively, most of us are passively allowing the things of this world in our lives, into our lives, and they're taking our focus away from, off of, the one who deserves all the wow. We need to wake up. We need to be careful. We need to be alert. And so I want to challenge you this morning to return to worshiping the Lord your God only by offering your whole life, not just your Sunday life, not just the fruit of your lips, but the fruit of your whole life as a holy sacrifice acceptable and pleasing to Him. Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 7, "Because we have these promises, dear friends, let us cleanse ourselves from everything that can defile our body or spirit, and let us work toward complete holiness, because we fear God." To paraphrase the 18th century preacher Robert Murray McShane, a holy life is an awesome instrument of worship in the hands of God. A holy life is an awesome instrument of worship in the hands of a God who deserves all the wow from our lives. So, can I challenge you, as I've been challenged this week, especially these last couple of days, as I've lived in this message, that we need to surrender our lives in holiness. That may mean something different for you than it does to me. There may be a different dimension of holiness that God is convicting you of and calling from you right now. But let us commit as the people of God to surrender our lives in holiness to Him. I'm going to ask John and the team to come back to the platform. And we're going to sing a song about offering our lives to God. I'm going to invite you to stand as we do. Don't stand quite yet, but let me just say a couple of things first. And as we sing and as we stand, If you need to leave, this will be our dismissal. But I'm going to ask for others of us to make a journey to the altar. The altar represents a place of sacrifice. It represents a place of dedication and surrender. It represents a place of commitment and vow, covenant with the Lord. And I thought about this as I was out running yesterday. I usually don't remember what the Lord says to me when I run, but I remember this one. The Lord said, Ray, invite people to the front. And whether they come or not, that's their business. But I want you to be the first one there. And I want you to surrender your toys. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to bring my iPod, my iPhone, my iPad, my computer, and I'm going to lay these on the altar. Now, that doesn't mean you can take them, because I'm giving them up. Because God's still working on a generous heart for me, and that's another sermon. But. But this is beginning to squeeze out the holiness of God in my life. I'm connected all the time. And, you know, to a degree, that's a good thing, as I've already said. But I'm so busy. It's the Mary Martha thing. I'm so busy doing for God that it's taken away from me just being with God. And that's draining my holiness. And so I'm going to surrender this in holiness to Him, and I'm going to be more guarded in my time on all these machines. And I want to become accountable to that. And so if you want to check up on me and ask me, how you doing on that? How much time? You know, what are you spending time, more just quiet time, one-on-one time with the Lord? You're welcome to do that. I'll ask you about you, but you're welcome to do that. I'm serious. God, help me to surrender even the good things that have gotten in the way of the best things of the Lord. For some of you, maybe it's to take your car. In fact, when you come to the altar, if God leads you to, I want you to bring a symbol. Maybe it's to take out your car keys. That might represent the busyness of your life, or maybe it represents the material things that you're going after that's getting in the way of just your holiness before the Lord. And it could be that it's a relational issue with you. Maybe you're single and you're involved in some stuff that really is unholy and it's displeasing to the Lord. And you just need to come and you just need to, when you get here, just open your heart, give your heart to the Lord in purity. Maybe for you, it may be your marriage. You know, all of us probably, when we got married, we stood before a minister who led us through a ceremony of holy matrimony. Sacred marriage. And your marriage is anything but sacred because it's dominated by lovelessness, by isolation from each other, by anger. And maybe you need to come and just offer your ring hand to the Lord. Just, Lord, take this. I want to surrender even my marriage relationship or my family relationship to you. You know, maybe it's something else. Maybe it's your mind, and you just need to come and put your hand like this and say, God, I surrender this to you. I don't know what it is for you, but I know I need to come and make a dedication of my life in holiness unto the Lord. So would you stand, and if the Lord prompts you, let's just spend some time at the altar. Some of us need to do that. And I'll be the first one. John, lead us.
This is my desire to honor you, Lord, with all my heart, I worship you.
Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast, featuring part 7 of our series called The Wonder of Worship. If you live in the Portland area and are looking for a place to connect, please join us this coming Sunday. For more information about our service times and about our church, visit us online at www.pcctoday.com.